Now, with all of the sequences and drip campaign technology and software, you don't need as many SDRs. And so a lot of these companies, based on economic conditions, they're reducing that cost. The technology just continues to get better. It all depends on what kind of success they're finding with the technology and the tools they have. That's just what we're seeing. I mean, the market's always shifting for us. It's what's happening right now.
Welcome to Market Mastery, the podcast dedicated to uncovering revenue-driving strategies for sales leaders in B2B tech. All right, on today's episode, we are joined by the CEO of Treeline, Dan Fantasia, and fellow UMass grad. Dan, good to see you.
Yeah, Kyle, good to see you. Go UMass.
Yeah. I was just up there actually 3 weeks ago, and I don't know if you know this or not, but they actually have a sales club, not a formal sales program yet, but they have a sales club. Have you been to any of those events?
When did they start that?
I think 7 years ago, technically, but it's really ramped up, and now they have like 50, maybe 55 members. It's fully volunteer-driven. It's turning into a polished program.
Oh, I love it. I love to see all these programs out there. And I wish we had it. Don't you wish we had that when we went to school?
I would have absolutely loved it, but yeah, no, didn't exist. It wasn't a thing.
I know, man. I love to see all these schools picking it up. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, definitely. And so just for the audience, we've known each other for a long time. And actually, I'll provide a little context and background from my end. So you and I met just because a client, I think maybe two clients consecutively, had hired you and your firm to do some recruiting for sales professionals for them. So we had some client overlap. But if you could just provide a little bit of background in terms of who are you, who's Treeline, where do you guys focus? And then that will help set up the context for answers to come.
We've been in business for 23 years. Since our inception, we've had an exclusive focus on the recruitment of sales professionals. That's all we do, and that's all we've ever done. Sales is really our niche. We've had a tremendous amount of success. We've been an Inc. 5000 fastest growing company. We've been an Inc. best place to work nationally for, I think, 8 years now. Best place to work in Boston, also for 8 or 10 years, usually number 1, 2, or 3. And our successes have been all around our ability to deliver top sales professionals to our clients. Usually it's hard to find talent that they just can't get access to on their own. And so they come to us to make sure that we can bring them some individuals that can help them really grow their revenue and build their business.
I'm going to jump back to the UMass idea. What percentage, if you had to ballpark it, of the sales professionals that you're hiring for your clients are early career, traditional SDR profile?
There was a time where it was high. Now it's probably only around 10% maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where 2 years ago, it was probably more like 40%.
Oh, wow.
It's changed drastically.
Okay, I want to come back to that. So for that 10%, if a client is asking you to go out and identify high potential early career individuals, are you going to any of the collegiate programs that do exist? I know there's not many of them. UMass is still evolving, but are you looking at the collegiate level sales programs as like a quality pipeline of talent?
Yeah, absolutely. Bryant and Stephanie and UNH, there's a whole handful that I'm connected to, the professors and the individuals. And yes, we love students that have gone through either a sales program or a degree or even a club. They've dabbled in it. They understand what it is. They see it and they have a more accurate perception of what sales and selling is as opposed to someone coming to us saying, I want to be a salesperson because I like to talk to people.
Yeah. That's the standard line. That's always the line. Yeah.
It's always the line. It's like, all right, how good are you at listening?
Yeah, exactly.
We love those individuals because, you know, we've been doing this for 23 years. It's amazing how many folks you've helped start a career in sales that now are VPs and CROs and everything in between. So it's really good to be changing lives and helping people out.
Yeah. And to me, there's some just bare bones basics that the sales program can check off the list for you before you even talk about ability to effectively execute a conversation or ask intelligent questions. It's like, do you know what a CRM is? Have you ever seen one? Some of those basics. And then it's, you have, to me, one of the biggest things is you have opted in to the idea of pursuing sales as a profession. This wasn't some fallback. It wasn't a, oh, I'll try this out and see what happens. It's, no, you were really intentional about how you leveraged your time and where you put your energy, especially the clubs, which aren't There's no credits. You're spending your own personal free time to go and seek out that experience, which tells me a ton. So I love him for that reason alone, never mind some of the actual real skills.
Oh my God. And you know what, Al? You know what? The other interesting thing about those programs is whether you choose to be in sales or not, the experience you will get is invaluable. So if you don't want to be a salesperson, that's okay. Everything you've just learned is going to help you get your first job. Because now you're going to learn how to present yourself. You're going to learn how to public speak. You're going to learn how to interview. You're going to learn how to present. Like, there's so many great things. So if you don't even want to continue in the career of sales, join the club because it will teach you how to expand your own career, whether it's whatever other industry or profession you choose. It's really good. Those are excellent clubs.
Yeah, 100%. And so one of these ideas that I'm working on and that hopefully we'll have a post out soon on is to get a job as an SDR, you basically have to be an SDR. And so what I mean by that is, like, the SDR is all about, right, booking that first meeting. And so if you take the same general concepts that help an SDR to be successful in booking meetings, use that for yourself to book an interview. And so, like, do pre-call research, customize messaging for, like, both the hiring manager and somebody in talent acquisition, create video, like, use social, email, phone, and run an actual prospecting process at the target organization that you want to interview at to book yourself the meeting, and also be over the top transparent about it. Like, this is what I'm doing. I am showcasing to you that I can run a cadence at target personas with customized messaging in an effort to book myself a meeting. And so it's just an idea that I'm playing around with. I think it'd be cool. I just tried it with my neighbor's kid who's trying to get a job as an SDR. So we just tested it and it worked awesome. He got 3 interviews and he's working through final stages of one right now. And so I just think it's an interesting idea.
Oh, it's dead on. It's the exact same thing that we are trying to deliver, the message we're trying to deliver and teach to our candidates. I just did it with my daughter. She's done it. She's a junior. She just landed her 3rd internship. I want to understand, did you build like a prospect list? Who are you targeting? What is your ICP? Like, what are you doing? And so she knows it. She did it. She dripped LinkedIn, built it out, and of course locked down her 3rd internship. So yeah, it works, man. It is dead on. So I'd love to see that when you publish it.
Yeah, definitely. And to me, the other thing is the same general idea of you being a member of a sales club or you being intentional about seeking a minor or major in sales says, like, there's a certain level of commitment that you've already put into pursuing this career. Going through the level of effort required to do what we just talked about does the same thing. It shows I am really serious and intentional about trying to pursue a career at your organization and become an SDR. And it's not, well, I'm on LinkedIn, it's a blessing and a curse. How easy it is to apply for a job on LinkedIn is beautiful because of what it allows the applicant to be able to do efficiently, but it also really allows you to essentially blast your resume out to anybody and everybody without putting much care and consideration into who you're trying to go get a job with.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, I want to circle back to the 10%. Okay, so SDRs used to be 40%, now it's 10%. Why do you think that is?
I think there was a gigantic push just after COVID, 2021, 2022, just going into 2023. And so there was a huge push and a huge need. And with what we had for technology, companies were learning that they could drive the same success rates with junior, less expensive individuals and drive a message to the market. Now, with all of the sequences and drip campaign technology and software, you don't need as many SDRs. And so a lot of these companies, based on economic conditions, they're reducing that cost and they're having less people use more technology, which becomes a problem because it's hard to be authentic when you're using technology to drip on future prospects. And so what we're seeing is that companies are just using more technology where a year and a half ago, while some of the technology was out there, they were pushing really hard to get SDRs driving the beginning of the sales process.
So essentially the trend, at least right this minute, was less sales development headcount, and any headcount growth was going to come from account executives, maybe managing a greater percentage of the sales process.
Yeah, presently, well, everyone's right now, just the market's sluggish. So no one's hiring like crazy and they're not they don't need a huge SDR team. There's a lot of work to ramp that up, train them. You know, it's a lot of work to recruit, train, hire, retain, scale, grow. You know, it takes a lot of work. So we're seeing companies just not making as large of an investment as they used to. And they would rather focus on individuals that can close, that know the business, know the market segment, and can sell at a higher level and close the business. That's critical for them right now.
So if the same level of investment, like let's just say the ratio for SDR to AE used to be 1-3, maybe more like 1-2.5. If that's starting to expand and maybe it's going to be more like 1-4, maybe even higher, or maybe just some AEs aren't going to receive support at all. Are you seeing any changes in compensation plans for account executives based off of having less sales development support?
Still super aggressive, but it's not necessarily that they're getting less support. It's just different. You know, we use a product called Apollo, and what we can do with Apollo with a few people, we used to need a whole lot more. So there's just, the technology just continues to get better. It's getting better and better. And so you might be able to use less SDRs to drive more output and still support a decent amount of account executives. It all depends on the company. It all depends on what they're using. It all depends on what kind of success they're finding with the technology and the tools they have. Some of them might not be using any tools. And so if they're doing it more manually, they probably have a bigger SDR team. But that's just what we're seeing. I mean, the market's always shifting for us. It just shifts all the time. It's what's happening right now.
While yes, there is significantly more technology at sales reps' disposal, they can be more efficient, and the emergence of AI, not just standalone AI solutions, but also just the way that some of the leading players are building AI into the existing sales engagement platforms or revenue intelligence platforms is incredible. But I did look back at my comp plan from 2012, and I was still gold on 10 meetings and 6 or 7 opportunities. And I was like, that number kind of hasn't changed. Like that's true. You're still booking 10 meetings and getting 6 or 7 opportunities 12 years later. And I didn't have anything. When I was at my former company and was just on the SDR floor, we had just gotten the first InsideSales.com dialer. And it was like amazing. And it was blowing everyone's minds, but still we were doing that then, and we didn't have any cadence solution or anything sophisticated at all, basically Salesforce. But it is funny to see how much more technology is at a rep's disposal and comparatively how little the numbers have actually changed.
Yeah. And each generation is adapting. Like, you are an expert in this, right? You know this inside and out. Think of all of the folks that you trained, and that generation then learns something new and passes to the next generation and to the next generation. And then the technology and the resources we have to be more efficient and effective, it's just amazing. We've been doing this for 23 years. And what I saw 23 years ago to today, if you're not moving and changing with the times, you're just left behind in the sales market.
Yeah, to an extent, the one dispute I would make to that is being different is usually even better than being with whatever the current trend is. And so if everyone is using AI-driven automation and it is like this pseudo personalization and it has a similar look and feel and every email that's in your inbox feels the same and you have one that is slightly different, it can't be old school like 3 or 4 years ago. But if it's 15 years ago, it's like enough of a time gap where that stylist's style and approach is different enough that all of a sudden you see engagement rates start to tick up. Like what's old is new again. So I do see some of that stuff working, which is interesting.
But as soon as something hits, it's not long before it's adopted, right? Everyone's adopting it.
And then it stops working.
Yeah, that's right.
As soon as it's universally adopted, the buyers say, you know what, I've seen a lot of this. I'm not interacting with this. So it is a constant and it's a never-ending changing game, which is good for us as a business because it means that there is no playbook content in particular for us that is going to be evergreen, because even if it is best in class and perfect at the time that it's rolled out, buyer behavior changes so quickly, it's going to need to be updated in 2 quarters, 3 quarters, 4, but some period of time, like it's going to need a refresh.
Sometimes I'll get an awesome email and I'll send it to my team. I'm like, wow, look at this. This really got my attention. Let's try it. And then 4 months later, you get like 10 of them.
Exactly.
Let's try something different. Switch it up again. Yeah. it's cool. I like the change. It's just exciting. You got to be on your toes. You got to be thinking outside the box and creatively. And you always got to be learning, don't you think?
Yeah, oh, 100%. One of the other things that I talk to reps about in particular, especially sometimes when they're their clients, but more so on like this mentorship side, is this idea of constant learning. And we talk about internal and external locus of control and having the idea of an internal locus of control and you owning your own learning and development and taking whatever the company is providing to you as icing on the cake. Like, that's great if they do. But the expectation from my perspective is you need to go out and seek the information on your own. And if you're sitting back and essentially waiting for the company to deliver information into your brain, okay, in some organizations, maybe you can get away with that, but not many. And so to me, having ownership over that learning plan and being intentional about seeking that information and staying on top of not just what's going on within sales as an industry, but also understanding what's going on within your buyer's industry has to be owned at the rep level. Some do it, and the ones who do are great, but not many.
I agree. I don't think so. I think once the day's over, there's not a lot of people working on their business or their, let's say it's their career, but...
craft.
Yeah, right, their craft. Thank you, that's perfect. There's not as many people working on their craft as they are in it, right? So they're driving the activity numbers and they're looking for productivity and looking to hit their goals and quota and budgets. But very rarely are they working on their craft. They're always in it. They're always chasing it. And I know what that feels like, because as a CEO, same thing, you know, working in the business and working on the business are two different things. And if you don't carve out time to work on the business, you never will. And so that's a philosophy and that's a hard place to arrive, but you do need to carve out time to focus on your craft.
100% agree. Yeah. As you're saying, like working on versus in, obviously the business owner just starts to go, oh yeah, yeah. I fall into that trap all the time. Okay. So 2023, I think at least publicly, from my perspective, it seemed like there were significantly more headlines, at least around layoffs and downturn within like overall sales headcount. But if you look at JOLTS data, it didn't seem like it was as bad as maybe headlines would make you assume. But from your perspective, knowing that you're on the hiring side, so people are coming to you to help recruit sales professionals, how bad was 2023 in comparison to like the 10 years surrounding? And are we making a comeback now in the first half of 2024?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think it was as bad as the headlines, by the way. I tend to be confused by the news because we see that at least in the white collar market or the technology, the software space, we're seeing it to be very sluggish. So 2023 was not a great year. It was a fine year for us up until October, November, and then mid-December was really slow. And then January popped, which was gigantic. February was solid. March slowed down. April was good. May is okay. June should be big. And I suspect July is going to be sluggish. We usually see consistent growth typically throughout the year. And right now it's just sluggish. And so there are definitely companies hiring, but not as many that hired in 2022. They just don't have the volume of need, but there are still plenty of companies that have a need. The difference is almost all of the need is based on a specific skill set that will add value to the current selling environment. If it's not a specific skill set, it's harder to ramp up new people. For example, we don't have as many SDRs and BDRs because it's still a lot of effort, but the return is not as great. And so you have more companies looking for specific individuals. The challenge is that specific individuals recognize that their selling environment might not be as healthy as it once were, and so they're not willing to take risks. Like, why leave an environment that you know exactly what's happening, that you have a pipeline with, to join another company to consider the unknown? And so that's the challenge. You have companies that are hiring, but they need a specific individual. So the search becomes much more challenging for them. That's why they use us. And they're not spending as much time hiring less experienced sales professionals because they're recognizing that their market's sluggish as well.
And so do you think that if interest rates come down, specifically within technology, which is where both of us play, it's all B2B tech, do you think interest rates come down and then there's this cascading effect where now all of a sudden VC and PE, but mostly VC, has cheaper access to capital, starts flowing money back into technology companies, and the boom time returns? Or what are you thinking is going to be the catalyst for the resurgence? Or will there be one?
I think likely the election. I think probably end of the year, Q1, is when you'll really see a uptick. You might see some slow gains, consistent slow gains. Like, remember, I was just saying how our months are going up and down. We're much more consistent than that typically. We might see more consistency as we round out the end of the year. But I think it's probably next year that we'll see the uptick. I'd love to say it's going to happen sooner than that. I just don't see it. We have a healthy pipeline of customers and searches and things of that nature. But we're used to like 1.5 million of searches that we're doing on a weekly basis, right? So we're doing a lot of searches. The market's just not supporting that right now.
Yeah. What's interesting too is how much just human psyche plays into this and how it doesn't align necessarily with numbers. And even in some of our client base, you're looking at numbers and we're beating on every goal that was set. And you're looking at the forecast and it's strong and it looks like there'll still be a beat. And then there's still a hesitance to invest further. There's just this fear or pessimism about what the future is going to hold. And so there's a hesitation to continue to invest, even though none of the available data tells me that there is a reason to do that. And so if you take that small example and multiply it by everyone who's actually going to be consuming or purchasing technology, it starts to make sense why it's been so difficult for sales professionals to ultimately hit their quota, and then also for these companies to continue to grow.
Again, we've been in business for 23 years. We've seen some crazy markets. 2008 was the worst for us. That's when just the market just crashed. That was probably the worst, 2008, 2009. So there's a low every now and then. COVID, I actually thought COVID was very strong. We were stronger in COVID.
We killed it.
Yeah, it was great. And so now we're feeling there's some uncertainty out there. It's a little bit sluggish. And I think it's probably the beginning of next year that everyone really starts to get sure-footed and we all start to take off again. But there might be a few months that we still have to sludge through to before we get there.
We're looking into the crystal ball. We'll see when it actually happens. But all right.
If it's sooner than that, I'll be psyched.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be great. On the management front, so sales management in particular, do you see any major differences in hiring profile for frontline sales managers? Not SDR managers, like closing rep management. Are people expecting more experience out of the management team who will be leading account executives?
Not necessarily. I think what they're looking for more than anything is creativity, thought, accountability. If you do hit a wall, what are you going to change? What are the ideas? What are we working on that's new? It could be a little bit less experience that has fresher ideas or newer ideas, where someone that is a little bit more senior might be frustrated with the market. So our clients are looking for creative thought, thinking outside the box. How do we address and challenge and go after a challenging market? What are the ideas? And if it's like, well, this is what's always used to work, but it's not working now and I'm not sure what we should do, there's no creative thought to that. They want people that are thinking outside the box. Bring me new ideas and let's try them and let's see if we can move the needle from there.
Makes sense. Any additional emphasis on operational chops within management? Like they want people to be more sophisticated with Salesforce, reporting, modeling, anything like that?
Yep. Check. Yeah, all of the above.
It makes sense. Our clients seemingly, without extremely intimate knowledge, struggle to hire for RevOps. It seems like that everyone has an open rec for a RevOps professional, and they're really difficult to find the right one. The result of that is if you're understaffed on the RevOps side of thing, more of that responsibility gets pushed to frontline or mid-level management. And so there becomes a requirement that you actually can do things, not just from a user perspective in Salesforce, but effectively create and run your own reports and actually glean something from them, not just click run on a dashboard, but actually be able to say intelligently, what is this telling me about our business? And to your point, get creative about what does that mean in terms of what we should do going forward to come to better outcomes?
Yeah, that's right. Pivot, change. A lot of times, I know you do, we do the same thing. We track everything. You need all of that data to figure out what's changing, what's happening, what's winning, what's working, what's not, right? Without that information, I just don't know how a sales organization can even move forward. You just don't see it.
Yeah. Any sectors in particular, like cybersecurity for us is always a top three industry, like every year, regardless. And even when some other ones, you know, displace it as number one, cyber is always high. But anything for you that you're seeing so far this year where you're seeing a ton of action coming on the recruiting side for any sub-industry category?
No sub-industry category. We're so broad.
Yeah.
As long as it's inside sales, B2B, we add a lot of value. It all depends. If a company has a need, they're all reaching out, basically. They just need help.
Cool. All right. Well, Dan, thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate the time, as always. And we'll catch up soon.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. I appreciate being here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Market Mastery, brought to you by The Bridge Group. If you're a revenue leader in the B2B sales space or know someone who is, connect with me on LinkedIn. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on future episodes.